Hello and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. Today we have two Columbia Workshop selections created by Norman Corwin, known as the Poet Laureate of Radio. These shows were both created before World War II. We have a hilarious leap year comedy, When Everything is Backwards. It's Sadie Hawkins Day, when women can propose to men. A famous composer runs a dramatic theater company, and Burgess Meredith does vaudeville. Lots of well-known radio personalities turning into the opposite of their public personas. This is Columbia Workshop, The Great Microphone Mystery, first broadcast February 29th, 1940 on CBS.
Before proceeding with tonight's special Columbia Workshop production, may we remind you that next Thursday, the Columbia Workshop presents My Client Curly, adapted by Norman Corwin from an original story by Lucille Fletcher Herman. And now, the Columbia Workshop presents The Great Microphone Mystery, The Case of the Mysterious Leap Year. An extraordinary incident in the annals of detection involving some of the greatest names in broadcasting and taken from the files of Ellery Queen, Master Detective. It began on the night of Thursday, February 29th, 1940, and to follow its amazing pattern of humor and pathos, we take you to the comfortable apartment of Ellery Queen.
Hello? Yeah? Yeah? Well, it don't make no sense to me. Just a minute. I'll call Mr. Queen.
For me, Sergeant. Hello? What's that? Well, that sounds incredible.
The screwiest bunch of talk I ever listened to.
What's that again? Why, of course, we'll be right over. What a puzzling call.
Puzzling? It's nuts.
Don't be too sure, Sergeant Peely. That was Elmer Davis. He wants us to rush over to the Columbia Broadcasting Studios at once. He says weird things are happening. I thought he was joking. He talked of a radio studio with walls covered with red flannel.
Yeah.
He said the microphones were talking back, that his news ticker was issuing not tape, but a constant stream of anchovy paste.
Yeah, on little crackers.
Sergeant, get a taxi. We're leaving immediately for the Columbia Broadcasting Studios. You needn't wait, driver. Come along, Sergeant.
All right.
Girls, to your cars. Don't primp and preen. It's Sergeant V and Mr. Queen. Elevator, Mr. Queen. Blondes Express, elevators, brunettes, local.
We'll take an express, miss.
21st floor studio's going up. Mr. Queen, I can meet you at the City Hall at noon if you'd buy the ring.
What?
I say, wouldn't you like to get married?
Why, not just now.
Aren't you Ellery Queen, the gentleman detective?
Yes, but really, I don't want to get married.
Then you're no gentleman.
What the... Sergeant, what became of that girl?
Paging Ellery Queen. Paging Ellery Queen.
Oh, boy.
You're Mr. Queen, sir?
Yes, I received a call. Are you the lad Mr. Davis mentioned?
Yes, sir. He told me to show you around the studios. Right this way, sir.
Sure you won't change your mind, Mr. Queen? No? Then how about you, Lieutenant?
I ain't a lieutenant, and besides, I'm already married.
Now, Lieutenant, I'm merely proposing marriage. You needn't get so excited.
No, I tell you, no, no, no!
All right, Lieutenant, all right, Sergeant. Refuse my hand, miss the chance of your lifetime, but don't be redundant.
Well, I'll be a ring-tailed baboon.
Studio due to go on the air, Mr. Queen. Will you step through here?
Hello, Tommy. Hello, Tommy. How's the kid, boy?
This is Burgess Meredith, the actor, Mr. Queen.
Why, of course. Oh, yeah. I've enjoyed Mr. Meredith's dramatic portrayals in the film of Mice and Men and his stage roles.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed your Pursuit of Happiness programs, too.
Thank you, Queenie, but the kid's wacky. I ain't an actor. Now, wait a minute. Excuse me. I gotta go on the air.
Presenting Burgess Meredith in Songs and Patter. He's just returned from his triumphant vaudeville tour on the Arizona circuit. The Flatfoot Palooka from Tuscaloosa. Let her go, Professor!
Hi there, boys! Hello, Ma! Hello, Ma! Thank you, boys! Hey!
It's nice to be back singing for you tonight. For my opening number, I'm going to sing you the famous English cigarette song, Shoot the Gasper to me, Casper. Better known as Singing in the Rain. You got it? Take it away, boy. Hey, I'm singing in the rain. Just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling. I'm happy, happy, happy again. I'm laughing at the clouds. So dark up above. The song is in my heart and I'm ready, ready, ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain. I have a smiley alley, I love my face. I walk down the lane with a happy refrain. I'm singing, just singing in the rain. Come on, I'll take it away, boy, and walk this. Hey!
Yes, boy. Little Joe from Baltimore, folks. Yes, gotta get the town getting hot, huh? Listen to that, hear that? Good. Little scat singing, turn it to one. No corn popping, the corn selling, really copacetic, woo. Yeah, hot so much here. Yeah, hot, he's hot. Yeah, he's hey. Stormy cow's face, everyone from the place. Come on with the rain. I have a smile on my face. I walk down the lane with a happy refrain. Singing in the rain.
Something screwy here, Mr. Queen.
Yes, Sergeant Ferry. Burgess Meredith, an otherwise sane and talented young actor, and I find him singing, tap dancing. Tommy, suppose you lead on. This is very interesting.
Okay, Mr. Queen. Right through here. See that fellow there? That's Bob Trout.
Bob Trout? Oh, yes, of course. He doesn't seem to be doing anything that's wrong. Nothing seems to be wrong with him. Take this down, Sergeant. 10:20 p.m. encountered Bob Trout, famous for reporting the important events of the nation.
We present Bob Trout.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Two brillig and slithy toes did gyre and gimble in the wave, all mimsy were the borer grows and the mome wrath outgrave.
Very profound indeed.
Thank you. Then, as if in upper show it stood, the jabberwock with eyes of flame came whiffling through the telgy wood and burbled as it came.
Maybe it needed some bicarbonate of soda.
And hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. Oh, frabjous day, kaloo kalay, he chortled in his joy.
Excuse me, aren't you Bob Trout?
Quite correct. I believe you're Ellery Queen, aren't
you? I'm beginning to doubt it. You are Bob Trout.
Oh, yes, indeed.
The famous radio reporter, I mean.
Oh, no. I have the kiddies hour. It was very pleasant seeing you, Mr. Queen. One, two, buckle my shoe, three, four.
Sergeant. Did what just happen?
Look, Maestro, I don't want to put any phony ideas in your noodle, but things ain't on the level around here.
Sergeant, sometimes your perspicacity amazes me.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
Pardon, s'il vous plaît. La, 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 la,
that's Miss Beatrice Kay. She's the star of Columbia's Gay 90s Review.
Oh, yes, Beatrice Kay. Why, she sings those grand old American hits of the mauve decade, the ones Dad hums around the house.
Monsieur, I am insult, sans blague, n'est-ce pas? Oh, I am Beatrice Kay, oui. But I am the French dancer.
French what?
The French dancers, chanteuse. I sing nothing but the French songs. Pardon, monsieur, I must go on the air.
Well, shut my big mouth.
Play, maestro, s'il vous plaît.
Why do our voices tremble, dear, while we dance? This is the kiss of romance. Why do we both resemble deux in a trance? Parce que this is the kiss of romance. Soft, soft as a petal falling out of a tree. Oh, I think that I shall never, never see a poem lovely as a bush. Oh, something's wrong, no, maestro?
Yes.
Oh, well, c'est la guerre.
Why do you say I love you, dear? While we dance. Ah, l'amour, toujours l'amour. L'amour, toujours l'amour. Il pleut de mon cœur comme il pleut sur la ville. Quelle est cette langue qui pénètre mon cœur? Ah, l'amour, toujours. L'amour, toujours. Oh, my dear master, I am so sorry. My dear audience, I am so sorry. You will apologize to me, no?
No!
Master, continue way. Why do you say I love you, dear? With each glance, a glance. Ah, Pasquin. This is the kiss. This is the kiss. This is the kiss. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Kiss, 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 kiss. This is the kiss. Oh, romance.
James Cowboy.
Bravo, bravo. C'est bon, c'est belle, c'est magnifique. They'll do it every time.
Who's that gentleman, Tommy?
That's Howard Barlow, the famous symphony conductor.
Oh, of course. Mr. Barlow.
Yes?
Perhaps you can help me, sir. I've enjoyed your concerts.
Concerts? My concerts? You must be mistaken. I'm a dramatic producer.
A dramatic producer?
Yes. May I ask you to excuse me now? My cast is due.
John Reed King reporting, sir. Star of the Croup Theater.
Hello, Coach.
Hello, Ham.
The flabby players, I believe.
Come on, look over your parts. Okay, Stoops, I mean, okay, Troop. And remember, I want this to be kept up to the best standards at the Columbia Workshop. Our play is called Triss. Corwin, you play Nat Weber, a hero against your will.
Okey-doke.
John Reed King, you're Jack Hamlin, the handsome villain. Earl McGill...
You said it.
Your father, Hank Jordan, an old 49er. Mel Allen?
Right.
You'll play Zenas Grimes, just one of the boys. Gotcha. And Beatrice Kay will be Chris. Triss. The angel of Blue Canyon. Curtain. Music. Take it away!
The Howard Barlow Repertory Company in a tale of Western life entitled Triss or Beyond the Rockies. Act One. We meet Triss, the angel of Blue Canyon, as she approaches Hank Jordan in the Hotel Hades.
Hello, Father.
Hello, darling care. Hello, boys. This is the little girl I was telling you about. 20 years ago tonight, the stagecoach crashed down from the precipice and killed everybody. Everybody but one exception. A tiny baby clutched in a woman's arms, and there stands that bundle of rags I picked up 1 year ago.
I ain't changed a bit, Paul.
Hiya, Triss. I'd kiss you if we was alone.
Aw, Nat, you say the darndest thing.
And her nasty Jack.
So this Nat Weber has struck gold, eh? I could use some of his wealth, Ozenus. I could use some of his wealth. Ozenus!
What do you want, Jack Hamlin?
I want to jump Nat Weber's claim. His mine is next to yours.
Okay, Jack, but if we found out, they're liable to hang us.
Now, don't worry. I'll pick a fight with Nat. Listen to that, Nat, little Triss. If she goes too far, I'll box her ears, the brat.
Jack Hamlin, take back them words.
I won't!
You will, too. I'll take off my coat and I'll thresh you.
Oh, Nat, Pa, take him home.
Not till I make this gambler gulp his words. I mean this gambler gulp his words.
Ah, for my sake, Nat.
Well, all right. But I'll be even with you, Jack Hamlin. I'm not through with you yet, you scoundrel.
I've got his coat for the papers.
Triss hides in the barrel while Jack and Nat go out. Enter Zenas Grimes.
Now, this Jack Hamlin's a clever scoundrel. If we got the mine, he'd cheat me out in it. I reckon I'll hide these papers in this here barrel.
Jack Hamlin, you can't bluff me. Now they're safe.
I'll say they're safe.
Act Two. At Nugget Pass, Triss is at Nat's cabin.
Nat! Nat! Have you come home? I'll knock, and if he don't answer, I'll know he's out.
bar.
Silence speaks louder than words. He's out. Just wait till I see that Nat giving me that sticky taffy. He's sweet on Susie Smith. I ain't good enough for him since he struck gold with my ragged dress and holy socks. He wants Susie Smith because her shoes squeak when she walks. Oh, I wish I was dead. Oh, Jack Hamlin's coming.
I reckon Nat ain't home. Zenas is pulling against me, but I'll make him suffer for it. It's an evil day for the man who tries to outwit Jack Hamlin. Hello. Hello. Here comes Hank Jordan. Hello, Hank.
Hello there, Jack Hamilton. You're out of your latitude here.
What do you call my latitude, Hank Jordan?
Booze vaults and gambling dens is your latitude, Jack Hamilton. Places where scoundrels and banditten plot to rob honest men of their rights.
Foil, drat it.
I know you stole them papers, and I know you threatened Tris. You got a plan to injure Nat, but look out, Jack Hamilton. I'm fonder of them, too, than of old gold, I should say, in the Sierras, Nevada.
There he goes, the old bluffer. I'll get hold of that claim. So play your cards carefully, Nat Weber.
Or I'm the fiercest mad tiger you've ever met.
Enter Nat Weber, coming from his mind.
Suffering fool, cats. I'll fall off on this footbridge someday. It's a rickety old concern. Well, Nat Webb... You're pretty tired, aren't you, boy? You walked like a Trojan all day, but this bag of gold ain't a bad day's pay for slinging a pack.
A pick.
Okay, pick. There's Miss Triss sitting on the mossy bank. Good old Triss. She's a real trump, she is, and someday it'll be two souls with but a single thought, two hearts that beat as one. Thank you kindly. Well, I'll just sit here and rest.
Hello. There's Nat sitting on that messy bank. I'll just sneak up and blindfold him. I'll blindfold him with my hands and make him guess who it is.
Guess who?
Let me see now. Susie Smith.
How dare Nat, Susie Smith.
Zenas Grimes has come to Nat's cabin to confess. Outside, Jack Hamlin listens.
Zenas is telling Nat about the theft of the papers. Zenas, you've spoiled my game. Now I'll spoil yours, you traitor. Hello, they're coming out.
Hey, good night, Zenas.
Good night, Rat. Nat?
Nat's in the cabin, out of the way. Now to get even with Zenas' crimes. So, Zenas, you've turned traitor, eh? I'll throttle you!
Hey, mercy! Mercy, don't! Don't use the knife on me! Don't!
Hey, Nat!
That's mercy for you. Lie there. I'll leave.
This knife and get away?
Someone shout for help. What's the trouble there?
Oh, Zenas. Is that you?
No, sir. Ain't nobody in here but us chickens.
Why are you lying there? There's been foul play here.
There is a foul play here.
Why, Zenas, you covered with blood.
Help!
Zenas' crime has been murdered.
Yes.
Yes, and you murdered him,
yes,
Nat Weber.
Jack Hamlin, you lie. What? Nat Weber is innocent. I saw you, Jack Hamlin, kneeling over Zenas with a knife.
Jack Hamilton, take off that collar and cravat.
Curses. I make a break for it.
Get him, Hank.
Oh, curses. My heart. He shot me in the end.
Oh, Nat, my hero, you've killed that villain. Now you are saved to wed Susie Smith with her squeaky shoes.
Ah, no, not Susie, but Yuzi, Tris. You saved my claim, and you saved my life. You has always been my good angel. I hope my good angel ain't gonna desert me now.
And there they go, that little bundle of rags I picked up 1 year ago, walking hand in hand with Nat. Virtue has again triumphed. It's two thoughts with but a single soul, two hearts that beat as one.
radio directors acting like hams, announcers who think they're John Barrymore. What do you think, Maestro?
Sergeant, I think this is a case.
A case? It's an epidemic.
There's a gasket missing somewhere. Just one little gasket.
A casket? Let me out of here.
I said a gasket, Sergeant. The missing link, the secret. Tommy, I have a hunch. Take me down to the newsroom.
The newsroom, Mr. Queen? Right over here.
And so we present a review of the news hot off the griddle by the eminent news reporters, Mrs. Bob Trout, Mrs. Lenton Wells, and Mrs. George Fielding Elliott.
Good evening, Mrs. Wells. How have things been going on those new curtains?
Oh, just fine, Mrs. Elliott. Continued activity in the sewing room is promised throughout the ensuing week.
Did I tell you that I had to issue a communique to my kitchen today?
Why, no, Mrs. Trout. Nothing serious, I hope.
Serious? My dear, ants have begun operations in the rear sector of our refrigerator and are advancing toward the preserves.
Dreadful. Have you confirmed the report?
The afternoon dispatches reveal a general drive in the direction of the marmalade.
Goodness, things do happen. Why, only this morning my maid scuttled the hot chocolate all over the breakfast room. I court-martialed her after the mopping up operations in that area.
You know, it was stated in marketing centers this morning that butter has gone up again.
My, my, and I was sure the factors in that situation were going to remain unchanged.
According to advices from the announcer girls, it's my opinion that our time's up.
You mean to indicate, I take it, that we have no time left.
Perfectly obvious, dear. We've received the old high sign from responsible quarters. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Did you see that? Mrs. Trout, Mrs. Elliott, and Mrs. Wells. I thought their husbands did the news.
Well, if this is radio, Maestro, I'll be a ringtailed baboon.
Why, Sarge, I don't think you're a ringtailed baboon. Well, not ringtailed, anyway.
Say, who is that dame?
Curious, curious, juicy curious, the whole thing.
How are you doing, Mr. Queen?
Frankly, Tommy, not so well. Is there a place I could go sit down?
Sure. Across here is a rehearsal hall.
Splendid. Sergeant, have you a hypothesis?
No, but I could sure use a hypodermic.
Mr. Queen, something's wrong in this studio, too, where Miss Nyla Mack rehearses. She's the director who puts on those programs for us kids. The March of Games and Let's Pretend.
Presenting Young Band with a Girl. Young Band with a Girl, that highlight musical half hour that brings you the greatest names in bandom. Tonight, it's Nyla Mack and her Kindergarten Gates. You'll hear them play, but first we bring you the life story of this glamorous orchestra leader, Nyla Mack. We first meet this infant piano prodigy when she was first coming to attention in a Kansas high school, where she was famous for sliding down the banisters. Just how did that figure in your musical career, Nyla?
That is where I developed my glissando.
And this is the way she played it then. Go on, Nyla.
Well, then, later, at the age of 17, I'd get so flustered when my beaux would call, both of them, that often I'd find myself seated at the piano with a pan of freshly made fudge sticking to my fingers. But did this deter me? No, not at all. I went right on playing.
And now, after her sensational success in stage, radio, and screen, Nyla Mack, her piano, and her orchestra have gone on to the very heights. Playing like this. What progress. And today, Miss Mack has turned that amazing versatility of hers to the realm of serious music. Nyla, what are you doing in the classical field?
It's a tone poem, whatever your name is. I have the central theme finished, and I'm performing it, as a matter of fact, at Carnegie Hall in a fortnight. It goes something like this.
Be sure to tune in again next week.
If logic be logical, this could not be. But if it be...
You suspect something, Mr. Quinn?
No, but I have a theory. Tommy, I want to see if these programs are going out on the air like this. If they're a loudspeaker handy.
Sure. Right over there, Mr. Quinn. Just turn that knob.
And so we conclude another of these broadcasts, symphonic hall, brought to you by yours truly, Ted Musing. Now, just to run over the action for you guys and gals again, the string sections was in there sawing all the way. And while the horns were a little bit from hunger in the opening minutes, they kind of muddled through and lambasted Bach all over the hall before it was over. Oh, that kid Toscaroli was in the pink tonight. He came out there smiling, winning attention with a ducky tailcoat ensemble set off by voguish striped trousers. And he displayed smart stick work for the distance. Madame Baruca Tononi displayed a swell pair of pipes and checked with the pre-concert dope by tangling with that Tannhauser and laying it down the old alley in a way to make Wagner stand up and cheer. Oh, and you should have seen the ushers in those new ultra bow ties. They were just too divine. Well, this is your polyphonic and fashion reporter, Ted Husen, saying toodaloo and turning you over for the wrestling broadcast from Madison Square Garden. That's a repeat bout between champion Jimmy Londos and me and Mountain Dean. Now, be sure to stay tuned in for that ace sports reporter, David Ross.
Ted Husing of the opera, David Ross at the Garden.
Are you there, David, old thing?
You know it, Teddy boy.
By the way, Davy, will you marry me?
Well, isn't this rather sudden, Teddy, old bean?
Well, it's late, dear. Just thought I'd ask.
Okay, if you feel that way, take it away, Davy.
Thanks, Ted. My friend, I would you were here with me to revel in the beauty of this modern Greek god, Londos. Warily, but with nymph-like grace, he approaches the center of the ring. He dances, he pirouettes, with all the abandon of Nijinsky in the Russian ballet, Snegurochka. His adversary, Man Mountain Dean, watches, as in a trance, in a dream. They embrace, but not in hatred or brutality, but rather in companionate delight. They might, in such moments, cry out in ecstasy, "My love is like a red, red rose." There now, you might expect terror or pain, but no. Man Mountain Dean, with exquisite delicacy, enfolds his adversary's neck in fond embrace. Much the same as Yasha Heifetz caresses the swan-like neck of his beloved Stradivarius. Londos, of course, playing second fiddle. Well, now he moves from the center of the ring, speaking to himself in the language of Plato. Or cosmia catastate, or svirica tiremenie, yafti pukrife dernese cleis trenis, kalinichtos anthropos, which translated means, "Dad hoits you, bum." Look you now, the tonal mood changes. From the delicate prelude, we go into prestissimo. The Greek rushes with glissandos burning in his eyes. And then with a pair of tweezers, Londos plucks, as though they were daisies, the delicately scented hairs from Man Mountain's beard. Oh, delightful pastoral scene. And now, listen as Londos runs arpeggios up and down his opponent's ribs. He wrings his neck. They wring each other's necks. All right. Breathes there a man with soul so dead, who never to himself hath said,
"Not popcorn, not chewing gum."
Well, what sheer drama. I mean drama. I must remember my diction award. But look, the straightened force of the twifle on the stoop there. They strike each other. Can this be violence? Listen.
Sergeant, most unusual, don't you think?
Maestro, if it's all the same to you, I'm going to get me a long, tall Mickey Finn.
You better stay here, Sergeant.
Why?
Because you've got to get to the bottom of this case.
Me?
Yes, you. Don't look now, Sergeant Beale, but I'm not Ellery Queen.
No,
I'm Frank Gallup.
The guy who announces the Philharmonic?
Right you are, Sergeant. Well, this case is in your hands now. I bid you good evening, Sergeant Beale, and lots of luck.
Well, I'll be a ring-tailed baboon.
Thinking it over, I check with that, Sergeant.
Oh, yeah? Nobody leave, you hear me? Nobody move a muscle. You think you can pull anything there like on the force? Tell me. Who had a hand in this thing?
Well, gosh, Nyla Mack and Ted Husing, Bob Trout, David Ross, Mrs. Elliott, Mrs. Linton Wells, John Reed King, Mrs. Trout, Beatrice K., Burgess Meredith, Norman Corwin, Howard Barlow, Earl McGill, Mel Allen. Ray Bluck directed the music. Phil Cohn directed it in collaboration with John Fitzgerald, and Paul Phillips wrote it.
Yeah, well, I'm holding a lot of you. Gee, I gotta solve it. I gotta. What would Mr. Queen do?
Message for Sergeant Veeley.
It's from Mr. Queen. Sergeant, I suggest you remember the leap year legend. On February 29th, the planets are aligned to give license to girls to propose to boys. And what is less widely known, license is given for all people to do the things they have secretly longed to do. Perhaps your suspects have been leaping on a character, yours, the real Ellery Queen. I got it. Okay, kid, we don't need them anymore.
You mean?
I mean it's a cinch. I've solved it. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Next, we have a dramatic show from Columbia Workshop and Norman Corwin. It's a poetic, surreal exploration of a marriage made miserable by personalities and the economic pressures of the Great Depression. Norman Corwin directed the show and augmented the language with unique sound effects. This is Columbia Workshop, Wake Up and Die, first broadcast October 12, 1939 on CBS.
The Columbia Workshop presents Wake Up and Die, a psychological drama of married life written by John K. Lagerman and featuring Frank Lovejoy and Elsa May Gordon in the principal roles. Wake Up and Die is Mr. Lagerman's first radio script, although he has written extensively for other media. We now present Wake Up and Die.
Of torture known to mankind, the most common is self-inflicted. It's the mechanical annihilation of sleep, accomplished by an intricate device known as the alarm clock. Every weekday morning, from as early as 3 and 4 to as late as 9 and 10, approximately 15 million alarm clocks perform major operations on some 20 million Americans. The instruments are of many types. Some of them cut through sleep with the suave urgency of a knife-slicing cantaloupe.
Oh, another day, another dollar.
Other instruments call up a picture of a cheerful sadist, whistling gaily as he jabs pins in his victim.
Head. Will that thing never run down? Where's my mule? Oh.
Alarm clocks come in many guises, and various are their ways. But the great majority still employ the same old method. Comparable in military tactics to the barrage of shrapnel. The instrument which we hear now is the repeater type. It rests on a dressing table in the bedroom of Mr. and Mrs. George Blossom. They're both somewhere in the early 30s. They have a fairly comfortable place here, inner spring mattress and all. The furniture is matched, painted to resemble the natural wood. The bureau seems to be given over to Mr. Blossom. One of the top drawers has a firm bite on the cuffs of his trousers. The alarm is still ringing, though more weakly now. A bowl of artificial nasturtiums has been arranged on the telephone stand near the window. The Ah, Mr. Blossom, through the blue monotone of his dream, has heard the alarm. His mouth opens, his lips move silently, his stirs, his
quick, eyes... Quick, Margie, get off the track. Margie, quick, here comes the train. Look out, look out! Margie, poor little Margie, run down by the locomotive. Finest, sweetest little wife a man ever had.
What goes on anyway?
Gee, I thought you were hit by an express train.
Well, the alarm, you sap. You're dreaming. Express train. Think you'd gone nuts or something. Waking me up with that kind of talk. Happened just a little too often lately to laugh it off.
Voice goes through me like the sound she makes filing her nails. A busy like sound.
Your own mother told me once she used to worry about you as a child. Afraid you might take after the old man, I guess. Well, you know what your boss McGuire told you the last time you were late. After all, you know, jobs don't grow
on
trees.
On and on and on she goes, and where she stops, just pull the covers over my head. So, now get that tune straight, the one I'm always going to write.
And it won't do you any good to bury your head in the covers. I can take just so much and no more.
Voice. Wrong edge of a musical
floor. You should have known when you married me that you couldn't get by with this forever.
Oh. Take my hand and skip with me, Margie. Margie. It's a good tune. I should have been a songwriter. Not tied down to the desk that way. None of your lip, Mr. McGuire. Hit tune, $1 million.
That is George Blossom, you know, the songwriter.
He stayed with the million.
Nice fellow, though.
Democratic. Wrote that song that goes, Margie, da 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 da.
I'm always thinking of you, Ma. Gee, did I compose that too? Oh, what a guy I am. Why, they were playing that on the Sandy Hook steamer. Yeah, that's it, all right. Moonlight excursion, rain or shine. Free show, free dance. 6 bits a head, dollar a couple. Unaccompanied girls free. Oh, that's some dance floor. Get into that stag line, boy, and look him over. Let him see you. Don't smile, you dope look bored. Oh, gee, that's some swell dancer, that little one in the fluffy pink. And she might take on weight later on. That's Marge. Only I don't know it yet. Oh, boy, she's cute. Wonder what she's like. Wonder what's her name. Wonder if she let me cut in. They're dancing around this way. Oh, some baby. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Cut in now. Go on, go on. She ain't the Queen of Sheba. Pardon me, miss. May I? Oh, gee. Nice. Smooth. Gee, she's some girl. Dark and thick. Let's get away from this noise. Just out the door and up the stairways. Top deck. Just through this door and we're on deck.
Lights. Look. We're almost back, we are.
Oh, come on, Marge. One kiss won't hurt you.
No, no.
You know how I feel about you.
No, no, Georgie. Somebody might see us.
What if they do? Who cares? Look. Straight up. Shooting star.
Where?
There.
Oh, Georgie, you're so romantic, aren't you? You got lipstick all over your face.
Oh. Oh, no, Marge, you mustn't laugh. Where are you? Listen, Marge, I love you. Marge, that's nothing to laugh about. Can you hear me? I want to marry. Take care of me. Please don't laugh, Margie. This is important. Can't you hear me? We'll have a home, kids, and a way of life. Marge, where are you? We're going to stand for something, see? You and I, hand in hand, two against the world, Margie.
Look at me, you little fool. Open your eyes and look at me.
Margie, don't look at me like that.
Where's Marge? She was young. She wore a fluffy pink dress. We were on a boat. We were in love, and now she's gone. Marge is gone, and now you're Marge. You! No, she can't do this to me. She can't change like this. She knew all the time, and she let me go on. She all the time in that fluffy pink dress. She.
Open your eyes, I tell you. Wake up. You're a person to death, shaking that way in your sleep, yelping, making faces like you're having a nightmare.
Oh, sure. Sure, I'm getting up. There's plenty of time, plenty of time. Don't worry, your little head. See, I'm awake now. Oh, up on the elbows, man. You see, Margie? Oh, that's it, easy, man. Plenty of time. Hold it there. 2 little seconds. 3 little seconds. Each little second. Lousy day. Sour, vinegary light. Bad breath of day has blown in the window. Everybody has a bad day today. Millions and millions of bad days today. Another yawn coming. Hold it, man. Need more strength. My wind's bad. Can't take it like I used to. The one time I swam a river on a dare. Time clown. Washing a monument with Marge. Postcards, nation's capital, wonderful experience, educational. Good old Marge. So sure of herself in sleep. Holding her mouth funny and stiff like when she's mad and she doesn't know what it's all about. But sure of things. Instead of her mouth. Roses red, violets blue. Huh, Marge? Starve, fever, feed cold. Right, Marge? Good old Marge, ain't she the one? Have to kid her along. I've outgrown her, I guess. I always know just what to expect and what she'll say. Georgie, this has gone far enough.
Yes, there he is, asleep again. Snoring. Big, lazy lump. Well, I might as well sleep a while longer myself. Nothing I can do. Fine, ambitious guy I picked for a husband. Night he cut in on Sandy Hook excursion boat. All hot and damp and wilted. Had it all figured out, he did. Always knows what he wants before he feels like it. And me so tired, shopworking all day, and no word from... Don't think his name, or you'll begin thinking about him. Wonder what he's doing now. If he remembers anything. He jilted me. Wasn't at the pier, so I went alone. Along comes Georgie. He'll do, he'll do. Cutting in and right away hot-footing it for the deck. Carrying hook, line, and sinker. Shooting star. Him and his shooting stars. Romantic. Like runs in a stocking. Him fussing around. Scared to death of me and hating me for it and kissing me on a dare with himself. Good old Margie, yeah. But how about me? How about me, myself? Me, not you. Not just anybody, but me, Margie Anderson. That was so long ago. 2244 and a half East Bedford Street. 2-family house. Fine corner location. Just above all night delicatessens. Neon sign through the front window. Sure, sure. Just like moonlight, you said. Let's turn off the lights and let the moonlight in. Red moonlight coming in the window upside down from the street. I get it. You couldn't see me in that light. It was fine that way, wasn't it? You could talk to yourself that way. Make love to yourself. Me sitting there waiting, thinking you'll snap out of it, poor sap. I can just hear you.
Oh, gee, honey, you're beautiful tonight. I don't mean that you're not always beautiful. I just mean that, you know, got a little surprise for you tonight, honey. I bet you can't guess.
I just bet. Candy, the kind you like. Or flowers, yeah, flowers. Those flowers are really something.
I always figure it's not the cost, but the feeling that's behind a gift that counts. How about a little kiss?
Proletarian orchids from the subway entrance. 35 cents a bunch at the outside. Well, flowers are flowers, aren't they, Georgie? Even if they smell of the BMT. You can always kid yourself you're giving the little woman a break.
It's the little things, I always say, that count with a woman. Now, you take my wife.
And here you are, without all those little things. Here you lie, as God made you. Without your hair slick, without your two pantsuits, without your comic strip smart talk, without all the little gestures, like picking your back teeth with your little finger, or your imitation of your pal Jeff Hadley's way of laughing through his snozzle. What a man. And this is my husband. This is my life.
Well, for better or worse, Marge, as the Justice of the Peace just said, we're hitched, Margie. Gee, we're really married.
Really married. That was 10 years ago when it happened. I said to myself, now that we're married, things will be different. And then the months and the years began to march by. January, February, March, April, May, June,
July, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April.
George is kind of slow on the uptake, but when we move into a place of our own, we'll be all set.
October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May.
We don't seem to be getting much of any place. Oh, but then I guess it's really this depression. When prosperity comes again.
May, June, July, August, September, October, November.
It takes a long time for people to adjust themselves, I guess. Maybe by next year. Maybe tomorrow. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow
and tomorrow.
Before we're 30, something's sure to break for us.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
Maybe if we had a child.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
I'm getting old. Getting gray hair and wrinkles.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
If I could only look younger.
Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
Too late. Too late.
That's a woman for you. Always fussing around with her face and worrying about fat.
I had a voice once. People said I looked like Joan Crawford. Said I should go into the movies. What a laugh. I had brains, too. Could have learned shorthand. Waited around a while. Could have been a nurse. People needing me. Really needing me.
Marge, darling, I need you.
Instead, I got that. Sure, you need me. Like you need a street address. Like you need a mirror to shave by. A tune you can whistle in the dark. Yeah, sure, you need me. And I'm sick and fed up with it.
Good old Marge.
I'm sick and fed up with it, I tell you. Your everlasting procrastination. Other men have jobs and have to get up. You think you're any better than they are? Who do you think you are, anyway? Yes, who do you think you are?
Go on, Marge. Go on. Who do I think I am, anyway? Who am I, anyway? I am I. To the pie in the sky, I am I till the day I die. I am... Who?
Well, who are you? Speak up, man. Tell the jury your name.
Why, it's George Blossom. What have I done? Why am I here in court? Why does everybody look at me as though I'd committed a crime?
You'll have a fair trial, my boy. And may God help you when the jury delivers its verdict. This is your attorney appointed by the court.
Why, it's Marge. What are you doing here, Marge, dressed up like that? You're supposed to be home waiting for me to get back from the office. Why don't you answer me? Oh, come on, Marge. Take off those horn-rimmed glasses and tell these people who you are. Tell them that this is all a joke.
Anybody at all. I am your defense attorney. Your fate is in my hands. See that you show the proper respect for counsel.
The defendant will now take the witness chair.
Okay, Your Honor. There. But, Your Honor, can't you tell the jury not to look at me like that? Can't they just act natural? Gentlemen, you needn't stare at me. You know me. Can't you smile? Can't you give me any sign? You there, you're my boss, McGuire. I work for you. I see you every day.
Well, maybe I'm late once in a while, but that's human, isn't it? And you're my dentist. We're old friends. It's true, I owe you a little money. And you there. That's Jeff Hadley, an old friend of mine, a real sidekick. Judge, you'd die if you could hear some of the scrapes we've been through together. We're both married now and settled down, but we're still buddies, though. See one another every week, play bridge for a tenth of a cent a point.
The witness's appeal to the jury is out of order and useless, too, since all the gentlemen in question are stone deaf. Counsel will now proceed with the examination of the witness.
Who are you? Who are you?
I am George. I'm 32 years old. I am employed by...
Who are you?
Yes, who are you?
Yes. Who is the witness? Who is he?
I'm an American. I was born in the city. My parents were American. I drink a little now and then, but I'm not what you call a tippler. I go to the movies once in a while for relaxation. I play golf when I can. I sing a fair tenor. I swim a little. I'm a Protestant, although my grandmother on my mother's side was a Catholic. But I'm as good as the next fellow. I'm a citizen and a taxpayer. I voted the Republican ticket in 1936. Margie, don't let him do it. Margie.
Yes, stop grabbing at me. Let you tear all the covers off. What is it? What's the matter?
Oh, nothing. Nothing. I must have dropped off to sleep again. Getting up now, I can't stay in bed forever. Just 2 minutes. All right, Marge. I'll be getting up now. I can be out of here in less than 10 minutes.
I just remembered, Georgie. We're going to the Hadleys tonight.
All right, Marge, we'll go. We'll go to the Hadleys. Sure, we'll go. We won't get into that old argument again. If I could only talk straight to her. If I could only say no. We're fed up with the Hadleys just as the Hadleys are fed up with us. We're fed up to the teeth with this apartment, the city, the way of life, and each other. If I could only break it off. This job, this routine, this getting up to nothing, coming back to nothing. If we could only come out with it. But the lie has gone too far. We can't break it. It's our life together now. We both know it's a lie, but we can't say it. I used to plot ways of doing it. I'd suggest doing screwy things in the hope it would come out. Like getting drunk together. I can just hear myself telling Marge like this.
Well, boys, it's Friday night. We got 2 whole days to kill. 2 whole days with no office hours. Now, suppose you and I act like a couple of young squirts tonight, huh? Suppose you put on that low neck number, and I'll get into a boiled shirt, and we'll have ourselves a time. Maybe spend a little money and get a little tight and act a little foolish and stuff. What do you say,
though? Oh, I don't know, George. Can we do it some other night? Or would we go anyway, all by ourselves?
Anywhere, everywhere. And why shouldn't we go by ourselves? The town's ours. If we feel like taking it. We deserve a little spree every once in a while. Don't you think so?
Georgie, you do get the craziest ideas. All of a sudden, you want to do something. Besides, I haven't got anything to wear. My one evening dress is way out of date. My hair isn't fixed. I'd look like the rest.
Now, you look swell. I remember that dress. It's my favorite. Your hair looks fine. What's the matter?
Besides, Georgie, there's a question of money. We really can't afford it. We haven't paid our laundry bill or the dry cleaning bill for a month. The rent's coming due.
All right. Forget it. It was just one of my crazy ideas. All my ideas are crazy according to you.
It's yours.
Forget it, I said. I'm going out. I'll take a walk around the block or something. I'll see you later.
And I'd go up. When I got back, she might be there. She might not. Sometimes after a fight, stay out very late, seeing a movie over and over and over and over again. I guess it used to drive me nuts. When we made up, I'd go overboard on the soft side.
Margie, you're a sweet one. I guess I made things pretty tough for you at times, but I've got a terrible heel, Margie.
Oh, none of that now, Georgie. Go on away. I don't feel like it now.
But honest, I mean it, Margie. Where would I be without you? What would I have to live for? Nothing at all. I wouldn't want to go on without you. I know I don't deserve you, Mark.
Oh, don't be silly, George. Cut it.
Something always got in our way. Attitudes got in our way. We could never think up any of our own. They were the attitudes we picked up from everywhere. The movies, feature sections of the newspapers, comedy programs on the radio, childhood playmates, popular songs, advertisements. The attitudes never really belonged to us at all. If she ever came out with one idea of her own, I'd fall over backwards. She's still scared to death I may someday get an original idea and stick to it. Like staying right here and letting all this pass by. She don't have to worry. I only get those ideas in my sleep. I'll be awake soon. I'll get up soon and I'll feed myself into the revolving day. She doesn't have to worry, but she is worrying, isn't she? She's worried about my being late, my losing my job, my saying to heck with the whole lying mess and starting over again. While I'm still lying here, she's overdue on her next line. Is she gone back to sleep and forgotten her lines? I count ten, and if she hasn't spoken, I better wake. One, two.
Wants coaxing, he does. Getting a big kick out of this. Thinks he's tantalizing me. Going to give the little woman a scare, I suppose. Lying there, holding back that silly grin on that little mussed-up face of his. Makes him feel like a big shot, doesn't it? Folding his eyes closed. Sure he knows just what I'll do next. Ain't he the big-hearted Joe? What a man. Kicked around all day in a two-for-a-nickel job. Taking orders, licking boots, gossiping in whispers. No wonder by 5 o'clock his ego's punch drunk. No wonder when he gets home he can't look at me. He's got that fishy glaze over his eyes. Got to get the old ego fixed up first. Well, a couple of drinks helps that. Poor little wise guy. Let him have his fun, enjoy his little joke. I'll come across once more. Get up now, Georgie. This has gotten beyond the fooling stage, and you've got to hop on it. Come on, look at the clock. I don't want to have to tell you again.
I don't want to have to tell you again. She said it and I hadn't budged. I haven't budged. Not yet, anyway. And it's late. It'll soon be too late. What if I didn't move at all? What if I just lay here until it was too late? Well, I'd lose my job. Then what?
Oh, he doesn't get up. Keeps his eyes closed. He's not asleep, though. I know him. I know him so well. It's awful to know a man so well that even his reasons for being alive seem like stale memories of something that might have been. Something you don't even want anymore. That's the way I know Georgie. Yet he hasn't gotten up. He knows it's late. Later than it's ever been. Maybe he's suddenly got the guts to say no. Maybe there's something in him that I don't know to death. Maybe he is somebody. Somebody stubborn and alive. Somebody they can't kick around forever. Somebody I could hold on to. Maybe.
Later, 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 later. I can hear the clock. Every tick of it makes it harder to lie here. Every tick of it brings me closer to the guy inside of me. The guy that can say yes or no. The guy that can look around and watch the sun come up and go down. See all that's going on in the world. The fighting, the living, the dying. And see all that goes on in the world and then say to himself, I'm the guy that this is all about. I can feel that guy inside of me. If I could be him. This guy, if I could be him, I'd just lie here and let the clock tick and don't move and don't say anything and don't think and don't move. Time will go on by itself. The whole thing will go on by itself and I'll be free of it. If I can just hold on here. It's getting late. Late. Too late to be late. Too late to be Georgie. Too late to be anybody but me. My job must be gone by now at the office. They'll think of... I don't care what they think. Don't move. Keep quiet, that's it. Silence in your mind. Room to be yourself. You can hear Margie breathing and she'll be wondering. Just hold on to yourself now. Shut the rest out. Let it pass. Quiet. Quiet, that's it. There's room now in my head for this guy the world is all about. Just a little while now. Quiet. Quiet.
Hello. Oh, Mr. McGuire. Oh, yes, yes, this is he, yes. Yes, sir, okay, right away, sir. I overslept, sir. Yes, sir, I'm sorry, sir, but yes, sir, yes, sir.
You have been listening to the Columbia Workshop presentation of Wake Up and Die by John K. Lagerman, a writer new to radio. The role of Georgie was played by Frank Lovejoy and that of Margie by Elsie May Gordon. Lynn Murray composed and conducted the musical score, and special choric effects were arranged by Norman Corwin, under whose direction the program was produced. Next week, the Columbia Workshop will bring you another new name to its series, Arthur Miller. Mr. Miller has dramatized the story of William Ireland, the notorious Shakespeare forger of the past century. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.